All right. We're here. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're excited that you're with us. It's a beautiful Tuesday here in Youngstown. Is it good to be back? First week back. Does it feel nice?
It was a little off. Like it was a little off, like trying to reassimilate in the things. And it was a little rough. I thought it was a lot rougher than normal.
Now, did Debbie start back in the classroom just yet? Yeah. I'm sure she's loving that.
Oh, yeah.
And Ryan doesn't start school just yet.
Yeah, not until the end of the month.
Yeah, we got a couple regular weeks. Yeah, we just got some letters from the school and stuff with time, so they're starting. And thank God, Ohio public schools and stuff are here in our area are all normal and no masks and all that sort of stuff. I was very excited to see the superintendent came out and was like, look, you want to send your kid with a mask? By all means, but we're not going to make kids wear masks. And I was like, that's what I'm talking about. So I actually have immersed myself in two books the last week or two. So my wife read one first, and so by an entrepreneur named Jesse Itzler. He owns the Atlanta Hawks. His wife owns the women's underwear company Spanx. And I started picking up some of his stuff on social media. Some friends that some of the people that I follow were sharing some of his stuff. I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And I was picking up some of the stuff that he was putting down. He reminds me a lot of some of the stuff that we say. As a matter of fact, in the intro to one of his books, he talks about how he made the decision to have a Navy SEAL move into his home. And he told his wife after he invited the guy and he was going to be there in 2 days. And I'm like, I would totally do that. And
now, would your wife be surprised if you did that? Or would it be like, nope, that's par for the course?
Not surprised, but she would not be happy. In the second book, the book that I'm in the middle of right now, he goes and lives on a monastery for 15 days with monks. And he describes in one chapter the conversation that he had with between his publicist and then his wife, convincing his wife that he was going to do this. And he described his thought process. And honestly, the whole time I'm going, I totally connect with this. And he's like, my thought process and the thing that has brought me success, the reason I was a successful entrepreneur, the reason that I've, you know, had multiple businesses and all this sort of stuff, is because I ascribe to the philosophy and I operate with the ready, fire, aim approach to life. Like, we're going to get in the plane and we're going to build it while we fly it. And if the wing breaks, we'll fix it and we'll figure it out. And I so connect with that being a gut level decision person. Now, yes, I certainly, want to measure and I want to look at that stuff. But when something fits, I'm in and I go with it. And I, well, what about X or what about Y or, you know, and it was quite funny because when he said to his publicist and his editor that he wanted to live with monks, he was thinking like Buddhist monks and stuff like that. Well, they found him a monastery of Christian monks. So he was totally caught off guard because he did zero research when he got there. And he found out they raised dogs at the monastery and all this sort of stuff. But it was all like, as he went there, he figured it out.
Right.
And I so connected with that portion of the story because there's so many decisions that I make in the church world and even with personal stuff. You know, I had a rabbi friend of mine a month and a half ago said, hey, we should do a blog or a podcast together. I said, sure, let's record a couple episodes. And we've had a ton of fun with it.
Well, what we talk about all the time is forcing a different perspective. And there's going to be a level where the normal things don't do it for you. So to keep upping your level, I mean, that guy's going to go to the moon one of these days because he can't figure out how to change his perspective anymore that it's been changed.
That's so true. but you certainly ascribe to like the ready, fire, aim kind of approach with decisions. And I've watched you make them where you're just like, that's what we're going to do. And people are like, well, wait a second. What about, and like, yeah, but that's what we're going to do. So we shot the bullets already out of the gun. You can ask questions about what caliber I shot. You can ask questions about the target. You can ask questions about the distance, but I already pulled the trigger.
Right.
And I'll deal with the ramifications afterwards. And I like that because it lets you prototype, right? Like I shot that. Oh, that didn't really work. All right, we'll adjust. You know, this needs to be shorter. I need to use a larger caliber. I need to figure this out. And I like that approach to life and leadership because so much of the other approach leads to inaction. Like we just sit around and talk about what we could do and we have meetings about meetings and, you know, and then you sit around and it's 2 years and you haven't done the podcast or you haven't written the book or you haven't launched the business or you haven't asked the girl out or whatever it is, because you sit around, you theorize and you talk about it. And I'm a talker. Like, I love to pontificate. Like, I'm good with that, obviously. But I find the joy in, hey, let's take a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, you can hit your stopwatch, though. Like, you can take me, who will start and screw up and fix it and then start again.
Yeah.
Hit your stopwatch and then have somebody who had 9 meetings. And by the time that you've started the first time, I fixed mine 9 times. And I'll be way ahead of you no matter what.
Yeah. So one of the things that's super inspiring in Jesse's books is he fully immerses himself in this. You know, it's one thing to be like, hey, you know what? I'd like to get in shape. I think I'm going to hire this person to train me. So he, first of all, he's a long distance runner, and he's doing this 100-mile race. Now he's running 100 miles. Now he, I think he said in one of the interviews I saw that he had just sold a company. So he had all this gear and he was doing it with a team of people. And, you know, they were all decked out and they were doing it as a relay rather than like running all 100 miles. And there was this guy next to them that had like a bag of crackers and a thing of water and was running all 100 miles by himself. And by mile 70, he's sitting down at one of the stations or whatever. And, you know, they're all high-fiving each other and they got their, you know, bougie gear on and stuff like that. And this guy takes out a roll of duct tape and he's broken all the small bones in his feet. And he duct tapes his feet and he's thinking, well, it's 70 miles, he's done. There's no way he's going to finish the race. So he duct tapes his feet, sticks him back in his shoes. He peed blood because his kidneys were failing and he ran 30 more miles. And when he got done, Jesse was like, I need, what makes a man do that? What makes somebody tick? And it really, he said at that time in his life, he was kind of like living in this rut, in this space where he just wanted to get outside the comfort zone. He wanted something to stir him up. So he cold called the guy, found out who he was, cold called him. Now he's a serial entrepreneur and part owner of the Atlanta Hawks. So he has some means, found out where the guy was, flew to him, had lunch with him, and before lunch was over, invited him to come live with him for 30 days. And the Navy SEAL said, yes, on one condition, you do whatever I tell you to do. And the book is the journey of those 30 days and what he learned about himself and about his body, about his mind, what he could push himself to do. And it was really just fascinating seeing that. But what I love is the immersive learning, the willingness to just go, all right, everything else goes aside. I need to fix this. I'm like pushing myself all in. Do you find that you have that kind of, hey, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to immerse myself, learn everything about this, dive in and do that. Have you done that with other things?
Well, I do have one rule is that I'm not going to, I have to make sure that every decision that I make is survivable. So that even if it goes, bust, like I can afford to play again. Right. And so if I'm the runner who's peeing blood and my half is a broken foot, I'm probably not running the rest of the race because the foot, if it's no longer working, I'm no longer running any more races. Sure. And there would be a point where I would say, you know, I'm not in it for that.
Well, and that's a big theme throughout the book is what do you have the capacity to bring yourself to do? And, the Navy SEAL, he just calls him SEAL in the book, but now everybody knows his name's David Goggins. He actually wrote a book, and he says that most people, when their brain says they're done, they're actually 40% done. They have 60% in the reserves that they could push into, but most people don't know how to tap in and go to that level. I found that to be insanely fascinating. And now obviously he's talking from a very physical level, but he's talking about it. You know, I think that's true across the board. People can produce and endure and fight for and push forward a lot more than they usually do. When people are done, I love that there's 60% more left in the tank. And it really made me take a look and go, all right, am I only giving 40%? You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I'm with you 100%. I'm like, really? Like, you know, at some level, there's going to be that threshold where people are like, no, I'm done.
Yeah. Like and it's not even like a short term thing. Like from a physiological side, let's just say you're running and your body starts telling you my leg hurts mm-hmm. or I don't have enough air or it's time to slow down. Right. It's the same deal where I can trick myself into thinking about something else and then forget that my leg was hurting and come back to it and say, oh, leg's not hurting anymore, right? But that was your mind wanting you to stop so bad.
Yeah.
It made something happen to try to trick you back to make you stop running.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So he does some crazy things. The first day they go to the gym, and now Jesse's a long distance runner, and he tells him to get on the pull-up bar. He says, how many pull-ups can you do? He's like, I don't know, 8 or 9. Gets up and does many as he can. He goes, all right, wait 30 seconds, do it again. till he can't do one. And he gets to at this point, he's only done 20. And he goes, all right, we're not going to leave this gym until you do another 100 pull-ups. And I think they were there for something like 2 hours and hands were bleeding and, you know, all yeah. sorts of stuff that, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, he was showing him, you can do this. It may take you 2 hours, but you can't. My dad used to say this all the time growing up, can't means won't. You know, it's not a matter of ability, but it's a matter of, you know, willingness.
Yeah. And you know, the next time, like, you go do 100, and even if it was hard, the next time you go to the gym and try to do 100, your brain says, you can't do 100. You're like, nope, I remember. Exactly. I did it.
The one night he woke him up at midnight and he says, we're going to run 4 miles every 4 hours for the next 48 hours.
What the hell?
and so at midnight they go out, and let's say it took them 10 minutes a mile, right? That's 40 minutes. They would run, then come back. He could get back in bed for a little bit. He'd wake them up again at 4 a.m. They'd go out and run another 4 miles. And he came to all his work meetings and traveled with him for 30 days. It wasn't like they just sat around at home and worked out. One time he was in the middle of a business deal. He had people sitting around and, you know, Seal was sitting there and they were like, you know what, guys, we're going to take, you know, just like a 30 minute break. Let's go clear the heads, whatever. They've been going at it for a while. And Seal looks at him and goes, burpee test. And he goes, what? He goes, burpee test. And he goes, I'm at work. I gotta go back in there. So he strips down to his underwear in his office and he has to do as many burpees as he can.
What the heck is a burpee?
It's where you go down into a push-up position and then jump up. My dad used to call them squat thrust.
Yeah, squat thrust. That's the real name. Yeah. Let's call them squat thrust.
The CrossFit crew would call them burpees.
Yeah, they don't know what they're talking about.
But so he had to do as many as he could in 10 minutes. Comes back in the meeting dripping with sweat and everything else. So, I mean, just constantly, you know, throwing these curveballs, taking him outside of his comfort zone. And I was so inspired by not just, you know, some of the podcasts and interviews and stuff like that, but just, you know, the way he writes the book. It's like one day, you know, here was day one, here was day two. And it just walks you through the day. It's almost like reading somebody's journal. But in that, you know, it so shifted his mindset. And even reading it, I was like, my wife, Sam, and I were, she goes, it just makes me want to get up and see how many pushups I can do tomorrow. Like it just, you wanted to stretch everything. It's like, you know, why am I complaining about this? And why did I quit that? And why didn't I push through? And, you know, it made me evaluate some of those things. And some of it, you know, you can beat yourself up on, or you can get up and push yourself past the 40%. So it's one of those type of books. And then the other book is different because it comes years later. He just felt like the world was too noisy. And he decided that it'd be a good idea to live on a monastery because monks are quiet and maybe I'll learn something. And a buddy of his suggested this monastery in the south of France. And so he researched it. And in order to live there, you have to commit to 5 years on the monastery. And the first 2 years, you can't have any outside contact with anyone. And he was like, that's a no-go for me. He has a family, has 4 kids. And so he called his publicist and they found him one in upstate New York. A monastery that would take him for 15 days. And he showed up and went on the monastery and wow. Yeah. And moved in, no cell service, no nothing, just unplugged. And he really talked about his relationship with time. And I thought you'd find this super interesting because mm-hmm. you're kind of, you know, we don't really have time. Time's different.
That's how most lightweight anybody's called me crazy before.
Well, so he uses the illustration. So him and his friends went and climbed this mountain in Vermont or Rhode Island, but it is the worst weather mountain in the United States, and so it only has less deaths than Denali. And he had his one friend was like, "Hey, we're gonna climb this mountain, da da da. We should do it." And he was like, "Great, I'm in. Yes," because he doesn't, you know, I didn't research anything. And then, you know, then I'm talking about it, and somebody's like, you know, have you thought about this? And so 3 days or 4 days before he's supposed to go, his buddy calls him up. They got 4 or 5 of them going on this climb. And his buddy goes, listen, you're going to need cold weather gear. You're going to need spikes, you know, shoes. He's giving him a whole rundown. And he goes, where are we going? And then he Googles it and, you know, finds out that people have walked off the side of the mountain because the weather's so bad. The wind's 265 miles an hour at the summit and all this stuff. And he's like, I'm not prepared for this. So he had to go to the store to buy all this equipment. And he goes into one of the stores and they only had like one thing they needed. End up overnighting everything through Amazon, shows up with all this stuff like in the package to get ready for the climb. And they're sitting down the night before. And he's like, the one guy who had him on the climb was like super positive. And he goes, he had a totally different tone to his voice. And he was like, guys, we mess this up, you will die. And it was like real, like we have to do this very, you know, methodically. They had a survivalist going with them. And he was like, oh, good. Well, we'll be okay. And he was like, no, you don't understand. This guy, he's the ambulance. If something happens, we don't want to have to use him. Like he is the ambulance. And so he walks through the whole thing. But the whole point that he keeps making throughout the chapter is all about time. And the night they finally get up to base camp. So they climb like 2.5 miles up and they're going to sleep outside in negative 40 sleeping bags, wind whipping, everything else. I'm like, why? So he's laying in his sleeping bag and he looked down at his watch or whatever. And it was, I don't know, like 8:20 or something like that. And he goes, you know, I'm laying there. He's like, there's no cell service, no internet, nothing. And I'm thinking to myself, man, it's got to have been at least 2 hours. And I look down and only 17 minutes had gone by. And I'm like, what the heck? This is going to be a long, you know, long night kind of deal. And so he's relating how time slowed down in some instances. And then when things got very intense, when the wind started picking up and the next day they tried to make it to the summit, time goes much faster.
Yes, for sure.
And he was talking about how he felt like his relationship with time was warped. That was kind of the lead into why he goes to the monastery. And
an easier way to process it too, like think about even weather, like when you're up in Ohio and it's 20 degrees and then you go to Florida and it's like 65 degrees, it feels like desert, right?
Yeah.
And you're looking around with everybody and they're wearing hoodies and, you know, snow pants down in Florida.
Yeah.
But from your perspective, it's super hot. And from their perspective, it's super cold.
Yeah. It's all perception.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, and so super fascinating is they get to they're a quarter mile from the summit, but they all made like a death pact. Like if we're not there by 1:30, we turn around and go back. And it's 1:30. They're a quarter mile. Everybody's like, can we push through? And they turn around. They don't make it to the summit. And he had blasted it all over social media that he was doing it. And so, you know, he's going home super defeated. And he gets home and he's telling his wife, he's like, you know, it stinks, we didn't make it. And, you know, he's having to eat some humble pie. And, you know, his wife's like, well, that's fine. You know, you can just tackle it next year, you know, schedule a trip and you go do the same thing. And he says, you know, he just had this moment, like, and again, referencing time, he's like, I'm not promised next year. Like my leg could be broken next year. Like I could not be able to do it next year. The weather, I'm doing it this weekend. And he called all his buddies back up. They all went back and they made it to the summit that Sweet. Saturday, 6 days later. But it was that again, you know, he does this great correlation talking about time and how we think like, oh, we can do that. I mean, I'll do it next year. I'll do it in 5 years yep. or whatever. We're not promised that time. And so it's all this conversation around time. But again, he immerses himself in it. He sends himself, shaves his head, moves into this, you know, monastery and goes all in. And to me, those sort of things are, it's just so fascinating. And then to be able to glean from that in a book, I just couldn't recommend the books more. They're really, really good. But from that standpoint, I think there's so many of us that are living in limitations that if we put ourselves in situations we wouldn't normally be in, we would discover a whole different things about ourselves.
Yeah. And you know, using that running analogy, like if I go out and run 3 miles, then the like I usually run a mile pretty regularly. My miles seem so easy after I come back from the 3 miles. And if I did a 6 mile, the 3 miles would get easier. If I did the 10 miles, the 6 miles would get easier. But that stretching isn't necessarily where you need to go and stay there, but it makes the normal ones even stronger.
Well, the thing is, though, most people design their lives to be as resistance-free and as comfortable as possible. And one of the things that Seal said was, if it doesn't suck, we don't do it. Because his whole thing is the best things in life come through when we put ourselves through of the worst crap. And he goes, you can either go through it or you can put yourself through it. And so you have this opportunity to train yourself with pain. Now, obviously, you know, he's very much on a physical level and that whole book is designed that way. But You know, I've followed him on social media enough now and seen some subsequent interviews. It's a mindset thing, regardless whether you're talking about how many pushups you can do, or can you launch that business, or can you date that person, or whatever it is you're looking to achieve. There's so much more that you can push yourself to. And so many of us are just comfortable right where we're at. And it's taking that leap outside the comfort zone. That's absolutely huge and crucial, and is going to grow us. So I did something crazy.
What'd you do?
So my friend Pesach, Rabbi Wilicki, was here from Israel, and I told him about the books I was reading. We had this great conversation at the church, and I said, let me come live with you for 2 weeks. And I was like, I will eat kosher. I'll go to synagogue. I'll do morning prayers. I'll do the whole deal. I said, I just want to immerse myself in it. Like, I read about it in scripture, and you and I talk about it, and I'm fascinated by some of this. And so much of it, you know, when I look at the Bible, I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, that's what Jesus did. And that's where, and so, and he kind of gave me this look, and he's like, my wife will never go for that. but we have a backup strategy. There's a potential that, so they have these schools called yeshivas where, Orthodox but Jewish students will go and give like a year of their life to studying Talmud and Torah and stuff like that. And he's like, I could totally get you into one of those for 2 weeks. You'd live with the students and you could do all that sort of stuff. And I told him, I said, we'll have to write a book when we get out of it,
because yeah, right.
These books have been so inspiring and fascinating, and the things that he thought he'd learn, he obviously learned different stuff. I just think it's so crucial for people to get outside that comfort zone. Because here's the thing, life will take you outside of that comfort zone, whether you like it or not. Yeah. Like, change is going to come. So you might as well put yourself in there so that you're gleaning, learning, and intentionally bringing yourself through some of those
things. Yeah, it's on your terms. Like, when we were talking, like, when I go take a risk,
right?
And you hit that stopwatch, we're ending up at the same spot, but I did it at my pace and on my terms and at my comfort level and where my risk was. It's the same thing with like health. You either invest in your health while you have it, right? 100%. On your terms, or you wait till it's gone and then you buy that all back. It's the same thing in the end.
Yeah. You either pay for pills or organic food. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Take your pick. How do you find, like, some people read a book like that, and this is a conversation I have with my wife, you know, we'll read a book like that and like, well, you know, of course he can take 30 days and invite a Navy SEAL to live with them. And, you know, he has, right, that's always the excuse. He has lots of money. He's the boss. He can take time off, et cetera, et cetera. You know, of course he can go 15 days to a monastery. I can't take 15 days off of work. To the person that would make those excuses, what would Joe say?
Well, okay. So if the reason that he is where he is, because he is willing to take those 30 days and invest in himself. Like, if you can't do that kind of stuff, you're going to be the reactive person forever.
I heard, Grant Cardone recently. I don't know if you follow any of his stuff. He's kind of a real estate finance guy. Not a big Dave Ramsey fan, by the way. He just disagrees with a couple of the approaches. He's big on using debt to your advantage. And so he disagrees that you should stay out of debt all the time. But he made this statement recently. He had somebody call him and was like, hey, you know, I'm a college student. I got $800. And, you know, what should I invest it in? And he was like, invest it in yourself. You're already broke. and it was such a great line, and I was like, you know, sometimes we look at that and we're like, oh, you know, I could turn my 800 into 1200. He's like, you're already broke. Just invest in yourself. Go take a class. Go put it in some way that's going to give you some sort of skill and tool so that you can come and be more valuable to a company or to a business you start or whatever. And I think too many people don't make investments in themselves.
Call it investments. I call it more like experiments in yourself to see what you can figure out, what your thresholds are, where your boundaries are. Because when you say investments in yourself, it's kind of confusing that, you know, you're like, the taking the class is really confusing to me. Because if I had $800, I would never pay somebody to teach me something. I would go learn something, right? Because I learn better that way. But, you know, an investment in self can be, getting yourself into a new territory. Go ahead.
Some of it's how you learn. Like, for me, I can still see college textbooks in my head that I read. I can still see the graph on page 33 of my Old Testament textbook with this, this, and this in it. I'm weird. I know that. But if you brought me to the makerspace and were like, here, tinker around and learn this, I'm like, give me the manual, you know, or somebody's got to sit here and give me step one, step two, step three. Now, I'll never forget step one, step two, step three, step four. But if I don't get the instructions and I don't get the manual first, it's probably why I like preaching so much. I have the manual. And so, yeah, I don't necessarily, you know, 100% know how to do all this stuff, but I got the manual so I can figure it out. You know, where you are much more hands-on, squish it, all that, where I would, hey, $800, I would invest in a conference for myself because I know I'm going to get invaluable nuggets, information, all that sort of stuff that I'm going to be able to take back and now go, oh, you know, I was inspired by that. I heard that and I can apply this.
Okay. So for you listening out there, it means both things. If you have $800 yep. and you make yourself more capable in some way, yeah. that's what investing in oneself would be, not just the traditional ways.
Yeah. No. And I think, for the, you know, for the average person, sometimes going to a conference is a cop out. Like, it's, oh, I'm going to give the $300 and, you know, company's going to buy lunch and whatever else. And, you know, I'm not going to pay attention. Like, it's just a, I made an investment myself. You didn't really make an investment in yourself. So whether you're going to a conference, buying a book, or, you know, going to go, you know, pick up some stuff and tinker and try and launch, you know, launch a new company with $800 at the end of the day, if you're not all in and whatever that portion is, you're never going to. Never going to come around.
Totally. I'm with you, man.
How does Joe, so you talked about taking that $800 and, you know, investing it into, Joe. How does Joe, not monetarily, but, you know, I know you make investments in your health through, you know, you're doing some running. I know you do, keto. I know you're getting back on keto after vacation. And you track that. But what are some ways that you invest in your spirit? What are some ways you invest in your emotions? How do you hit the, not necessarily hit the pause button, but how do you put the right stuff in?
So I have seven different categories. I couldn't name them if you asked me what they are, but there are seven of them, I swear to you. And I take a regular inventory of the ones that I'm are pretty good at and the ones that I'm deficient at. And if I put any money at it, I'm usually trying to take some of the ones that are deficient and bring them up the snuff a little bit. Cause if I'm going to take an injury, it's going to be on the ones that, yep. you know, whatever. So financially, I'm pretty good, and health, I'm pretty good. Relationships, I'm you know, professionalism, communication, I'm pretty bad, you know? And I'm like, oh, these ones need some attention down here. So the $800 is meant to make me more whole. And then what ends up happening when you take some of the those stresses off of the bottom, some fear goes away, some uncertainty goes away, and doubt goes away. And all of a sudden I get like 40% more energy to do all other things when I take those things that are ailing me away.
No, that's really good. I think most people like to double down on their strengths and just forget their weaknesses. Are you that type of person where you're like, hey, I'm really
those
good at
have always things. Taken care of themselves. I don't really have to do those strengths because you know, the stuff that's firing on all cylinders, when it's working, I don't like dicking with it while it's working really well.
So. Sure. But you hear entrepreneurs out there and leaders and stuff, they'll say, well, you know, screw your weaknesses. Don't focus on those. Just, you know, if you're really, really charismatic, double down on your charisma. And that's the thing that's going to make you money. That's the thing that's going to bring you success. And to some extent, I understand that. The areas where I have success tend to be the areas where I'm strongest. But the areas that are weak, I have a couple of options. I have to mitigate them at some level. Like, somebody has to pay the bills and take care of details. So I either have to hire that. I have to figure out how to do it myself. You know, you have to come to some sort of way to get the bills paid. You may not be good at it. It may not be your favorite thing to do. The details of an event may not be that fun. You know, just because my, you know, charisma and people skills may be my asset, doesn't mean I can just forget about those. So I do have to, and I find for myself, I may have to handcuff myself to my desk and have a meeting about finances or details or one of those things that I'm just like, please, someone gouge my eye out with a spoon. I would rather do anything else but this. But I know that they're important. And so, you know, in that sense, I can't just ignore them. And so sometimes you hear that and I get it's hyperbole and they're making a point, but ultimately, yeah, your strengths are your greatest asset, but you're going to have to mitigate your weaknesses at some
level. Let me give you the danger in that. In any investment, that if you're sort of like overinvested in one portion, it's bad. So your life goes like, you know, in waves.
Yeah.
So there's sometimes where you're in a part of your life where physical attributes or physical health is an advantage to you. And sometimes it's just not. Yeah. Sometimes I can have money that's sitting on the sideline that I just can't do anything with. So what if my skill was money? There'd be a period of time where I have to say, what do I do now? Right. So there's going to be different times where, like, a relationship might be a period of time where I'm not doing anything relationship, but sometimes I totally am. So that's the huge disadvantage of over-investing in that one segment.
That's real good. And you get lopsided, you know, you still have to do leg day, right? You see the guys that are all jacked up here and they got little chicken legs. And it's like, you still got to do leg day or you get lopsided. It's just true. There's balance to life. And so you may not like working out a certain muscle, but you have to do it or you're going to look funny. Which, by the way, Saturday, Jed, who does the We Do Recover show on here, is, I don't know if it's Mr. Pittsburgh, but he's doing a show. And I don't know if you've seen him lately, but he's down to 220, like three. He's cut down to like, I don't know, like 5% body fat and is like,
holy crap,
ripped and ready for this show. He's pumped. And so I'm picking my wife up at the airport Saturday morning because she's in Florida. And we're going to pop in and see his prejudging and hang out for a little bit and get see him do that. I told my wife, I said, are you ready to see a whole bunch of ripped guys in underwear? And I was like, we are going to be the most out of shape people there, but we'll be there and we'll be cheering them on in that sense. But, you have to be balanced in that. Like all those guys up there, you can't not work out your legs or you can't not work out your arms. Like you look funny. And so in the same way, we have these strategies. Some of us are really good with vision stuff and some of us are really good with details and, you know, all of it, you have to work to balance it. And sometimes that means hiring. And sometimes that means, hey, you know what? I'm going to figure this out. This person's really good at details. I love to surround myself with mentors that are good at stuff that I'm not good at. And I can say, hey, teach me, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, right.
Teach me your ways. Like, I don't need to be the, if I'm the smartest guy in the room all the time, I'm in trouble. I want to sit in rooms where I'm not the smartest guy in the room a lot of the time, because that's the way you grow. If I'm always the smartest guy in the room, that everybody else is in trouble, I should say.
Yeah. And I'd like to imagine that, you know, I've created an arsenal, even if I'm at like 70% efficient and 70% healthy in all of my places, I'd like to feel that you could plop me down just about anywhere and I could thrive. Yeah. You know, not just sit there and live and breathe oxygen and whatever, but I could actually do stuff and do stuff, you know, in without a bunch of friction.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certain skill sets and attributes that I feel super confident in. Like somebody posted recently on Facebook, they said, you know, what topic, if we gave you, if you had to talk for 30 minutes, what topic could somebody give you and you could do 30 minutes on that topic right now? And this is going to sound completely prideful and cocky, but I was like, you could hand me any topic and I could talk about it for 30 minutes. And in the back of my head, I'm like, there's somebody out there that's like, you know, we're going to talk about Japanese red beetles or something like that, or car engines. But it's very easy for me to go, that's fine. I will set up the whole conversation with, I know nothing about car engines. Here's the five things that I do know. And for those of us that don't know anything about car engines, here's our questions and why we have them. And that's how I'd talk about
it. See, I got imagination. My whole thing would be bullshit, right? It would totally, right? And at the end, I'd have to say, like, as long as you don't fact check me, all of this washes.
Hashtag fact check. That's awesome. Did our video get throttled, by the way? Speaking of fact checkers.
No, it did well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice, Ark. If you want to hear our opinions on COVID and some stuff, check out the last video.
I thought I watch a lot of those political, and I think it was one of the more, like, yes, there was a conservative slant to it, but it was probably the one of the most honest versions of it that I've seen.
We could have went on for another hour. It was a lot of fun, and that rabbi's such a charismatic and fun guest to have. Well, if somebody out there is sitting there and they feel like they're in a rut and they need to break out, what's three things they could do today? Or what's an experiment they should try with themselves? They can't go move into a monastery with monks, but what's something they could do today?
You can have different flavors of changing your perspective, and it could be go to a different place, be around different people, experiment with things that are different than your everyday world. If you just try to do what you did yesterday, guess what? You're going to see the world. See the world how you did yesterday. And if you want new eyes on things, you got to get out and away from the people that you're most comfortable with.
I had a professor in Bible college, when you put it that way, with new eyes. And he said, you know, the journey of faith is not just not doing all the bad things, but the journey in faith is actually just learning to see with new eyes. And he talks about, you know, the whole idea that when somebody comes to faith in Christ, they get this new perspective. and get to see things with new eyes. And that's what that's one of my favorite things about life, is helping people journey and see things in a new way. And so, yeah, get you some new friends, get around some new people.
And when you start pushing on those perspectives, it's not only that you like see things, but your judgments on things. Like if tomorrow you decided that time didn't exist, there are things predicated on time that you made decisions, because you might be wrong about it. And that's the best thing. If you can push on things you're certain of with things that are like on the fringe of being crazy, like Joe, then it brings some even new thoughts that you would have never got to otherwise.
Yeah. And it's so true. And we could probably do a whole episode on time. Not just, you know, most people are trying to manage the time, but really realizing that, you know, time, I think of, you know, when I started at Bridge of Hope almost 8 years ago, I had a 5-year vision. And by 18 months in, I was like, well, I got to come up with something else. That went faster than I thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
And then other things have taken longer, and you look at that. And so, yeah, you can put, you know, time frames on your goals and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's only predicated on what you believe it will take to happen. And, you know, whether that's, well, you know, I'll make $1 million in 5 years. Well, then it'll take you 5 years. But really honing in and believing that could happen in a month. It could happen in 2 years. It could happen in 2 days.
Another thing I would recommend is that really don't listen to other people. Like, since nobody has it figured out, if you take your cues for what you're supposed to be doing and what you're supposed to be thinking and how you're supposed to be behaving, again, you're just going to fall in that line of everybody right to the, you know, the graveyard. And, you know, if you break away from that, and, you know, let's just say you don't want to have kids by 30, then screw them. You go do whatever you need to do. And what do you, if you want to get a job at, you know, 55 or go back to college, you do you.
Yeah. But opinions of other people are killer, especially people you love. Most of the time it's people that are closest to you that,
in the name of keeping you safe, right?
Yeah. 100%. You know, hey, you know, you don't really want to do that. That industry's not great to go into. Why don't you try this? You know, I'm not sure, you know, do you really want to move out? Do you really want to? I was like, well,
all right. So you got a good job, right? Yeah. And then you get this idea that I'm going to quit this job and take 30 days to invest in myself. What do you think everybody around you is going to say? Is that a smart move? I'm going to go invest in myself.
Everybody
right?
thought Jesse was nuts in both these books.
Heck yeah. Like, right.
What are you doing?
Yeah. They are not going to give you good advice. Yeah. 'Cause then, you know, I bet you, though, I will tell you this while you're telling me about Rabbi and whatever. Yeah. If you own the Atlanta Hawks, I bet you he'd have let you live with them.
I don't know. He's got 8 kids. So,
there might be some logistical. Yeah.
You can have that spot over there on the sofa. But, you know, one of the things that is super funny that I thought, like, literally Joe would love this story. So Jesse has the Navy SEAL living with him, and he goes into this business deal with Kevin Garnett. You know that name, basketball player, and a few others or whatever. And SEAL's with him in the business, and nobody's talking to Jesse. Nobody's talking anything. They're enamored with this Navy SEAL. They're all talking to him. They don't talk about the business, the deal, whatever. They're just pumped. The time gets to a close and they go, we're in, whatever you want to do. And he literally got
the deal because
he brought him in. I was like, wow, you didn't even have to sell. He's like, I didn't have to sell anything. I didn't have to. There was no like, hey, we want to do this, we want to do that. What do you think? They were all just right, talking
taking notes. Bring SEAL. Yeah. There you go.
Get you a Navy SEAL ticket to some of these business meetings. Like, this is my friend. Yeah. Yeah. He'll beat you up. He'll kill you with his pinky. So. And it's important that, you know, people understand that you have to make an investment yourself. You can't get stuck doing the same thing over and over and over. You have to experiment. You got to try new things. An easy way to do that is sometimes there are things that you say no to all the time. Like every Friday, your company's like, hey, you want to come out to dinner with us? We're all going out to dinner. It's Friday night. And you're like, nah, I got to go home. And you say that, and you say that, and you say that, and you've been saying that for 5 years. Well, just say yes this Friday.
Well, guess what happens, too? Like, if somebody posted this on Facebook, I think you were actually part of that thread, too. And one of the response was, like, how do you get people to say yes to you? Well, you got to prime the pump. You got to do a whole lot of you yeses before you start getting the reciprocal yeses in return.
Yeah, 100%. Well, it is that time. We've had fun. We will be back here Thursday, and we would love for you to share this, like Youngstown Studio, but comment and let us know what topics you'd love for us to hit. Because truly, Joe and I can go any different direction. We can talk about the Loch Ness Monster. We can talk about taxes.
As long as you don't fact check us, we can talk about anything.
We can talk about anything. So shoot us a comment and tell us what you'd like us to chat about. And maybe we'll answer a few questions and have some fun with that on Thursday. So you guys have a good.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.